Homodeus, A Brief History of Tomorrow. The Humanist Wars of Religion. Initially, the differences between liberal humanism, socialist humanism, and evolutionary humanism seemed rather frivolous. Set against the enormous gap separating all humanist sects from Christianity, Islam, or Hinduism, the arguments between different versions of humanism were trifling. As long as we all agree that God is dead and that only the human experience gives meaning to the universe, does it really matter whether we think that all human experiences are equal or that some are superior to others? Yet as humanism conquered the world, these internal schisms widened and eventually flared up into the deadliest war of religion in history. In the first decade of the 20th century, the liberal orthodoxy was still confident of its strength. Liberals were convinced that if we only gave individuals maximum freedom to express themselves and follow their hearts, the world would enjoy unprecedented peace and prosperity. It may take time to completely dismantle the fetters of traditional hierarchies, obscurantist religions, and brutal empires, but every decade would bring new liberties and achievements, and eventually we would create paradise on earth. In the halcyon days of June 1914, liberals thought history was on their side. By Christmas 1914, liberals were shell-shocked, and in the following decades, their ideas were subjected to a double assault from both left and right. Socialists argued that liberalism is in fact a fig leaf for a ruthless, exploitative, and racist system. For vaunted liberty, read property. The defense of the individual's right to do what feels good amounts in most cases to safeguarding the property and privileges of the middle and upper classes. What good is the liberty to live where you want when you cannot pay the rent? To study what interests you when you cannot afford the tuition fees? And to travel where you fancy when you cannot buy a car? Under liberalism, went a famous quip, everyone is free to starve. Even worse, by encouraging people to view themselves as isolated individuals, liberalism separates them from their other class members and prevents them from uniting against the system that oppresses them. Liberalism thereby perpetuates inequality, condemning the masses to poverty and the elite to alienation. While liberalism staggered under this left punch, evolutionary humanism struck from the right. Racists and fascists blamed both liberalism and socialism for subverting natural selection and causing the degeneration of humankind. They warned that if all humans were given equal value and equal breeding opportunities, natural selection would cease to function. The fittest humans would be submerged in an ocean of mediocrity, and instead of evolving into a Superman, humankind would become extinct. From 1914 to 1989, a murderous war of religion raged between the three humanist sects, and liberalism at first sustained one defeat after the other. Not only did communist and fascist regimes take over numerous countries, but the core liberal ideas were exposed as naive at best, if not downright dangerous. Just give freedom to individuals, and the world will enjoy peace and prosperity? Yeah, right. The Second World War, which with hindsight we remember as a great liberal victory, hardly looked like that at the time. The war began as a conflict between a mighty liberal alliance and an isolated Nazi Germany. Until June 1940, even fascist Italy preferred to play a waiting game. The liberal alliance enjoyed overwhelming numerical and economic superiority. While German GDP in 1940 stood at $387 million, the GDP of Germany's European opponents totaled $631 million, not including the GDP of the overseas British dominions and of the British, French, Dutch, and Belgian empires. Still, in the spring of 1940, it took Germany a mere 3 months to deal the Liberal Alliance a decisive blow and occupy France, the Low Countries, Norway, and Denmark. The UK was saved from a similar fate only by the English Channel. The Germans were eventually beaten only when the liberal countries allied themselves with the Soviet Union, which bore the brunt of the conflict and paid a much higher price. 25 million Soviet citizens died in the war, compared to 500,000 Britons and 500,000 Americans. Much of the credit for defeating Nazism should be given to communism. And at least in the short term, communism was also the great beneficiary of the war. The Soviet Union entered the war as an isolated communist pariah. It emerged and was as one of the two global superpowers and the leader of an expanding international bloc. By 1949, Eastern Europe became a Soviet satellite, the Chinese Communist Party won the Chinese Civil War, and the United States was gripped by anti-communist hysteria. Revolutionary and anti-colonial movements throughout the world looked longingly towards Moscow and Beijing, while liberalism became identified with the racist European empires. As these empires collapsed, they were usually replaced by either military dictatorships or socialist regimes, not liberal democracies. In 1956, the Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev confidently told liberal West that whether you like it or not, history is on our side. We will bury you. Khrushchev sincerely believed this, as did increasing numbers of third world leaders and first world intellectuals. In the 1960s and 70s, the word liberal became a term of abuse in many Western universities. North America and Western Europe experienced growing social unrest as radical left-wing movements strove to undermine the liberal order. Students in Paris, London, Rome, and the People's Republic of Berkeley thumbed through Chairman Mao's Little Red Book and hung Che Guevara's heroic portrait over their beds. In 1968, the wave crested with the outbreak of protests and riots all over the Western world. Mexican security forces killed dozens of students. The notorious Tlatelolco massacre. Students in Rome fought the Italian police in the so-called Battle of Valle Giulia, and the assassination of Martin Luther King sparked days of riots and protests in more than 100 American cities. In May, students took over the streets of Paris. President de Gaulle fled to a French military base in Germany, and well-to-do French citizens trembled in their beds, having guillotine nightmares. By 1970, the world contained 130 independent countries, but only 30 of those were liberal democracies, most of which were crammed into the northwestern corner of Europe. India was the only important third world country that committed to the liberal path after securing its independence, but even in India, distanced itself from the Western bloc and leaned towards the Soviets. In 1975, the liberal camp suffered its most humiliating defeat of all. The Vietnam War ended with the North Vietnamese David overcoming the American Goliath. In quick succession, communism took over South Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. On 17 April 1975, the Cambodian capital, Phnom Penh, fell to the Khmer Rouge. 2 weeks later, people all over the world watched as helicopters evacuated the last Yankees from the rooftop of the American embassy in Saigon. Many were certain that the American empire was falling. Before anyone could say domino theory, on 25th of June, Indira Gandhi proclaimed the emergency in India, and it seemed that the world's largest democracy was on its way to becoming yet another socialist dictatorship. Liberal democracy increasingly looked like an exclusive club for aging white imperialists who had little to offer the rest of the world or even their own youth. Washington presented itself as the leader of the free world, but most of its allies were either authoritarian kings such as King Khalid of Saudi Arabia, King Hassan of Morocco, and the Persian Shah, or military dictators such as the Greek colonels, General Pinochet in Chile, and General Franco in Spain, General Park in South Korea, General Geisel in Brazil, and Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek in Taiwan. Despite the support of all these colonels and generals, militarily, the Warsaw Pact had a huge numerical superiority over NATO. In order to reach parity in conventional armament, Western countries would probably have had to scrap liberal democracy and the free market and become totalitarian states on a permanent war footing. Liberal democracy was saved only by nuclear weapons. NATO adopted the doctrine of MAD, Mutual Assured Destruction, according to which even conventional Soviet attacks would be answered by an all-out nuclear strike. If you attack us, threaten the liberals, we will make sure nobody comes out of it alive. Behind this monstrous shield, liberal democracy and the free market managed to hold out in the last bastions, and Westerners could enjoy sex, drugs, and rock and roll, as well as washing machines, refrigerators, and televisions. Without nukes, there would have been no Woodstock, no Beatles, and no overflowing supermarkets. But in the mid-1970s, it seemed that nuclear weapons, notwithstanding, the future belonged to socialism. And then everything changed. Liberal democracy crawled out of history's dustbin, cleaned itself up, and conquered the world. The supermarket proved to be far stronger than the Gulag. The Blitzkrieg began in southern Europe, where the authoritarian regimes in Greece, Spain, and Portugal collapsed, giving way to democratic governments. In 1977, Indira Gandhi ended the emergency, re-establishing democracy in India. During the 1980s, military dictatorships in East Asia and Latin America were replaced by democratic governments in countries such as Brazil, Argentina, Taiwan, and South Korea. In the late 80s and the early 90s, the liberal wave turned into a veritable tsunami, sweeping away the mighty Soviet Empire and raising expectations of the coming end of history. After decades of defeats and setbacks, liberalism won a decisive victory in the Cold War, emerging triumphant from the humanist wars of religion, albeit a bit worse for wear. As the Soviet Empire imploded, liberal democracies replaced communist regimes, not only in Eastern Europe, but also in many of the former Soviet republics, such as the Baltic states, Ukraine, Georgia, and Armenia. Even Russia nowadays pretends to be a democracy. Victory in the Cold War gave renewed impetus for the spread of the liberal model elsewhere around the world, most notably in Latin America, South Asia, and Africa. Some liberal experiments ended in abject failures, but the number of success stories is impressive. For instance, Indonesia, Nigeria, and Chile have been ruled by military strongmen for decades, but are all now functioning democracies. If a liberal had fallen asleep in June 1914 and woken up in June 2014, he or she would have felt very much at home. Once again, people believe that if you just give individuals more freedom, the world will enjoy peace and prosperity. The entire 20th century looks like a big mistake. Humankind was speeding on the liberal highway back in the summer of 1914 when it took a wrong turn and entered a cul-de-sac. It then needed 8 decades and 3 horrendous global wars to find its way back to the highway. Of course, these decades were not a total waste, as they did give us antibiotics, nuclear energy, and computers, as well as feminism, decolonialism, and free sex. In addition, liberalism itself smarted from the experience and is less conceited than it was a century ago. It has adopted various ideas and institutions from its socialist and fascist rivals, in particular a commitment to provide the general public with education, health, and welfare services. Yet the core liberal package has changed surprisingly little. Liberalism still sanctifies individual liberties above all and still has a firm belief in the voter and the customer. In the early 21st century, this is the only show in town.
That's it for today. I create a lot of content. I run a debating podcast. I write stories. I film videos with a drone. And I run many other projects too. If you'd like to stay informed of things I do, sign up to my private newsletter. It's free. Head to bit.ly/newslettersebastian, all attached and in lowercase. Thank you for listening.